Accession number 30063, Reel 7.
To drive in. Mr. Reed, Reel 7. You were taught to drive in the army, Mr. Reed. When was that?
That was at the beginning of the war starting, but prior to the war being declared, I was interested in driving because we had bought an old banger of our own, which cost £8, but we couldn't afford to license it and run it properly. But we used to drive around the garage, a big garage we had. We used to drive around there. And joining the army, that was one of the exercises we had to do on our training. Learn to drive a car. And we used to go out, four of us in a car, and take our turns in driving around Darlington and places like that to drive. And then we, for reasons best known to themselves, we passed. We were allowed to drive, at least I was. And I could drive. So I'm all right now. Didn't do any more driving at all because we couldn't and we didn't have the cars to use until we got to the Middle East.
And you said that there was no test or anything like that that you had to pass?
No, it purely and simply was, you're okay, the fellow who was supposed to be teaching us, it was simple to say, you're okay, you can drive okay, no bother. And there, as far as I was concerned, I could drive. Maybe a bit hasty in it, but I could drive. And cars we forgot about then, because we didn't have them to learn on. And the next time I came in contact with anything mechanical, apart from a rifle, was the desert being posted amongst a lot of us who were at the time with 7th Armoured Brigade headquarters, waiting to be posted to various units. And mine, while I was waiting, they collared me for driving a big lorry with them to go and collect water. That was the beginning of the driving. So then I went on to be driving all sorts, tanks, jeeps, you name it, little motorbikes, the whole lot. And they were all there in brigade headquarters, and quite frankly, they didn't have enough drivers to drive them. But they soon remedied that.
That's fine. You did mention when you got to Egypt, or shortly after you got dysentery, I think you were saying. That was your first dose, wasn't it? Your first experience of it.
Never had dysentery before, but that was when... That was my second time in the desert.
I see. I thought that we'd, on the last tape, you'd mentioned that when you got to that Mardi camp...
Mardi.
That you'd got dysentery there.
No, didn't have dysentery there. Had dysentery when I was posted for the second time to 7th Armoured Brigade headquarters.
We can come to that later and put it in its place. Yeah. When you were in this camp, when you first landed and you were in this Mardi camp, were you told what the situation was in the desert and what was happening?
It's funny you should say that. I've just been thinking about that this morning. What did we know when I was in Mardi? When I was just walking around, literally with my hands in my pockets, you know, wandering around, talking to people that I'd come abroad with, and they were stationed there. Yes, it was the second time I was posted to 7th Armoured Brigade, and we had no arrangement for... They were then... The brigade was in the front line. They were facing the Germans. And we had no arrangement to move one way or the other until we were pushed, or they were pushed. So we kept on pushing at each other. What was I going to say now?
You see, you've just landed in effect in Egypt. You're into this first camp.
Dysentery.
Will it?
Dysentery, that's right. I'd been with Armoured Brigade from the 3rd Hussars when we were scattered, and had nothing at all, and went to Cyprus and eventually found each other there. But they found me as well, headquarters found me, because I wasn't the 3rd Hussar. I was signals then, and said, right, come back here quick, Cairo. Mardi, it doesn't.
We can put that in its order as we go along.
And as far as dysentery was concerned, it happened when the desert came again.
Okay, we'll pick that up then. You'll be told, this is the first time you've just landed in Egypt, you're in Mardi camp. How long would you be in before it arrived that you were going to move to a unit?
Not very long in Mardi. It was very, very busy. There were a lot of troops staying there, all from signals, because signals had to service the whole of the brigade, indeed the whole of the army. They were responsible for the communications, so they had to do that. So the camp then was literally full. It didn't take much, because there was only one or two huts, were store huts, where they had various things, where they kept sports equipment, where they kept kit bags of people, belonged to people who were away in the blue. They were like that. And I would think, at the most, 3 weeks to a month. And then there was no waiting. Yeah. The vehicles were there waiting for you, and you were shipped up via Alex up to brigade headquarters.
And you were told where you were going, which unit you were joining?
Eventually, brigade headquarters first, and they obviously wanted time to sort us out, because they were virtually regular soldiers. We were territorials, Saturday morning soldiers, and the regulars didn't take kindly to us, because they had been up the desert and they had been moulding themselves to what was going to happen. And suddenly, the likes of us, who didn't know the first thing about the bloody army really, were posted to them and supposed to fight a war with them. So it was left to the regulars to sort things out, and us.
Have you any recall on the date that you moved and joined the 7th Armoured?
We landed from Suez up to Mardi. That would be around about 49, it'd probably be 41, the back end of 41, when that happened, and they just pushed us out to brigade, and brigade were responsible there for dealing with us, but I would think around about back end of 41.
So the brigade, it seemed quite a bit of action by then.
Not a lot. They were just feeling each other. The brigade was... It had seen action. I wasn't with it then, but it had seen action, and things had settled down, and they were looking at each other again.
So this would follow... You had O'Connor's Western Desert Force in the December 40, January 41, which chased the Italian guys. Then Rommel arrives.
That's right.
And they chased them back again.
Yeah.
Was Tobruk encircled at that time, or was it even later?
No. At that time, I'm still talking very early days. We weren't. They weren't out of Egypt. 7th Armoured. They were standing in Egypt, and it didn't take long before they were in what his name was, Tobruk, Cyrenaica. It's now called Libya, but it was then called Cyrenaica because it was an empire, part of the Italian Empire there, and it had the whole lot was Italians. So Tobruk wasn't mentioned, but the first time we went up there and had a push, war was declared, and they were really taking it serious now. They took Tobruk, but that was before I joined the 7th Armoured Brigade headquarters.
It's still, as you say, it was 7th Armored Brigade. It hadn't become a division yet.
No. It hadn't. Because they were now going to try and go forward, which they did. Which we did with the 3rd Hussars when I was with them the first time. And we went up and we just bypassed the brook and left the German occupation in there because they had nowhere to go. We couldn't go south, they couldn't go north. We were just swept ahead, chasing the rest of them up to Anjadabia. So that was miles beyond Tobruk, and they were left there, stranded by the Germans. So we were sitting pretty then, and Alagilier was, and the two of them. So as far as we were concerned, and as far as the whole lot were concerned, of 7th Brigade, we had no need to worry, because we'd won. We had taken all that territory. You know, we just sit and watch it.
But you joined them just before this, had you? You joined them and then they'd move forward into this.
That was the 3rd Hussars.
Yeah.
I joined them from 7th Armoured Brigade the first time.
And which is the time we're talking about.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, you've mentioned the fact that it was a regular unit, regular soldiers, and they were a bit suspicious of you. What position were you given when you got there? What was your job when you first moved into that headquarters?
Into the headquarters? We didn't have one.
And what was the setup?
We didn't have... excuse me. We didn't have one as far as that was concerned. All we did to fill in the time was have classes in how to handle a machine gun. I think I mentioned that. And looking at equipment that they had which you could show to us, and we saw machine guns that were blue in the face, and then something happened that wasn't going on. So then after that was the time when the second time up the desert, first of all we'd been pushed from that line Elagilia, which was miles beyond Tobruk, pushed like mad back again.
This was Rommel, wasn't he? Rommel had arrived.
We got as far back as far as we could. Tanks left on the desert, others hobbling along on one cylinder, whatever it is, exaggerating there. But getting back to Alamein, where it was only a narrow gap, and our forces were crowded together. So they had a hell of a wall of force they had to get through.
So had you been, or had your unit, the brigade, been in action advancing at this time? Had they done the advance up to Elagila, as you say? Were you with them then, when that advanced to Elagila?
Yes, not with the brigade. I was with the 3rd.
It's the same brigade,
but a unit. With a brigade, you've got 1, 2, 3, probably 4 regiments. And we were posted to regiments to keep contact with the brigade who were behind.
This is what I'm trying to get the picture of the time scale, so we're getting the right advance and the right retreat,
you might say. Now.
So that's fine. So you joined the 7th Armoured, as you say. Where was it that you joined them? Did you recall? I know it was up the desert, but do you recall any position or any location?
Sort of Mersey Metru, at the end of the railway line. It was just a short lorry ride from there to where the headquarters were stopped, and it was dark, so I couldn't see where we were. What the hell was that name again at the end of the railway line? It's in Nursing Way. I think I told you. Anyway, it was short of Mersey Metru. That was prior to the war. It was a holiday place and things like that.
How many people were with you, that were joining with you, joining the unit with you?
I would think around about 12.
And were you all signallers?
Yeah, to join there. Now, most of them stayed with brigade, or they were integrated into the headquarters and worked from the headquarters. And I always say to this day, the fact that I was interested in machine guns and stripping them and putting them together and God knows what else was tantamount to sending me to the front line.
That's just a strange kind of training to give a signalman. You know, you train you as an infantryman, aren't they?
So when I got there to the 3rd Hussars, lo and behold, what's happening? A tank with two guns on, and those are the things that we've been stripping and putting together in the brigade headquarters. But now they were for real. They were in the tanks. And if anyone shoot at you, you've got to shut it up or run like hell, you know.
So wait, you arrived at night. Do you remember the reception on that occasion?
Stay down, keep quiet, don't make a noise. See you in the morning, in the trench.
And you found a little trench to kind of get into?
Well, it was a big trench, because you used to dig the trenches like that when I had a line, but it used to be about 10 feet deep. And that was purely insane to stop any tanks that are coming from the west side, from the Germans or the Italians. They couldn't get over there. So
you were in effect told to settle down quickly.
Get down.
There would next morning would be really the first time that you were seeing people.
Next morning you wake up, what do you see? Sand.
What's the desert like?
Sand. All different kinds of surfaces. Some surfaces it has fine sand, other surfaces it has hard sand, and you can go like the clappers with your vehicle, or soft sand, which you may get bogged down, but if you had sand irons to stick under the wheels, and sand irons were like enlarged railway lines with big holes in, and the vehicle used to grip that, and once you got one out the back, stick it in the front, and eventually you got out of your problems with the sand irons. Rocks, great big rocks, and you had to drive to miss them. So you weren't on a straight road, you weren't playing on the left or the right, or any. You took the path that you could see. Then you could see it going. If you're going along here and you see a load of big rocks and things like that, you skirt around them. Otherwise you were breaking half shafts and God knows what else.
About navigation, how did you navigate your vehicles in moving around the desert?
You knew mostly what to do, but you had one man in each regiment who was a navigator. He had a sun compass.
But what were they like?
A sun compass was a round disc with 360 degrees on. And in the middle was a thin steel rod sticking up. And depending, the sun was always shining, so we no need to worry. Depending where the sun was shining from that rod there, down to the disc, goes the shadow. And that shadow, allowing just a slight for movement and things like that, that is the time on there. So you had a 24-hour time with it. Sun compass. Good. They're very good.
Vehicles must have had some kind of adaptation, presumably, for working in sand. I mean, it's going to get into the engines, isn't it, and clog things up. Yet they seem to move pretty well.
The maintenance of the vehicles were the responsibility of the driver. He was a driver maintenance man, just short of what the fitters did. We used to have one fitter with each brigade, one fitter only. We couldn't afford any more to look after them. But the driver was responsible for keeping his vehicle in good condition. If he didn't, then it was, you know, his fault. He was up on a charge. It was as simple as that. You keep one of those things, a vehicle going, so you can run that way or the other way. One way you're chasing the enemy, the next way you're running away from them. So they've got to be in reasonably good shape. I can go back to the 3rd Hussars again, when we went up, first of all, and we're standing in the line there and saying, across the desert from the coast. Good, good, now that's that. We've taken this line. So what do we do now? Have a game of football, isn't it? And it was like that. We had moved up, right the way up from Saloum and Egypt, right the way up we had moved to get to the stage. And we'd done our job. We got rid of the Italians. We have nothing to worry about. And we were hit by the Germans.
Well, we'll come to that, of course. We're talking about life in the desert, really, that you are experiencing for the first time. What about the mornings? If you got up in the morning, what time would you say it was reveille?
Well, you don't.
Again, we're going back to the time when you just joined.
No, not reveille. You have close getting up sort of style. I don't think you really slept in the desert somehow. You're sleeping on the sand to kick off with. Albeit you've got a blanket there and an overcoat if you had one, or a jacket, whatever, or you just put the whole lot on and sat down and went to sleep. It was cold, even though it was so hot through the day. It was damn cold, so you didn't sleep much as such. You might snatch a few minutes or so, or maybe hours when you got used to it, but no, there's not such a thing as bed. Eventually, if you were there long enough somewhere, you might find something to use as a bed. An old tent lying around. Nobody's in the desert, probably been torn, folded up, and something to lie on. But it was far from comfortable. Far from comfortable.
And you would obviously you get breakfast. What was it, British Army food you were getting as of England? Same type of food?
British Army food. We never sat down for a meal. There's no tables and chairs. Those things were obsolete. You couldn't take those anywhere with you. It was surplus to requirements. So what you did is go to where they were cooking the breakfast. The breakfast always, without fail, got a mug of tea with it. And I mean a big mug of tea, not like these things. And it was always hot, it was always good. And you had the other part where you might have got a sausage out of the tin of sausages. This is where they opened the tins, and this is possibly the only way they could get rations out of there. Failing sausages, you might get a bit of corned beef fried up or something. But this was the centre where the food was prepared, and you went along and you just got it and marched off again. Never, ever stay in a bunch to have food. Get out of the way in case anything came over, and there was plenty coming over, coming down. Far better catch one than catch 21. So the food itself, and then when we were in the tanks, we used to get one meal per day, if you weren't in action, if you weren't dashing around all over the place. The one meal was brought up to you, when I say up to you, up to the front, where the tanks were. The one meal was either McConaughey's, that's with bacon and stuff like that thrown in, bits of bacon. All out of a tin. No, nothing fresh. So we used to get all these different things, when I say different, curry. For the first time in my life, I smelt it first. And I didn't know what curry was as a young kid. We couldn't afford curry. I don't know how much it cost, but we never had it at home. We never had it in England when we're in Lodgefield Street at the Drill Hall. We never had curry there, so we're given curry, and the way they put the curry in, or mix the curry with the Dixie full of beans or whatever, was just a handful, and by the time you get it blew your bloody head off, you know, so you didn't eat this stuff now. And you used to go, and that was a case in point where everyone was separated. When you're in the tanks, you stay with your tank, because sooner or later Jerry may come over the horizon and say, there you are, bang.
We'll obviously talk about the tank experience. Yeah. Can we stay with the living conditions in the desert? No, we're talking about food. How was it coming up to you? You've mentioned it was in tins, but who brought it up?
Well, you've got the RAFC, which is the Royal Army Service Corps, and they serviced the brigade. The tanks, we might have scrounged some biscuits. But they were mainly for breakfast and to eat when we were hungry. We might have scrounged some of them. The vehicles brought all the stuff up, everything, from way behind to brigade headquarters, where they had the food lorry. He was the fellow that brought it up, put his burner down, pumped it up, and everyone went along and got whatever they got, soup or beans or potatoes or anything like
was
that.
It pretty monotonous food day by day?
It was not worth going for. The food was absolutely atrocious. In earlier months, when we overran the Italians, they used to have all sorts of food. And, you know, even the women were there with them. But we were quite happy to go in with the Italians when we were taking them over and eat their food and shoo them out of the way. So that way we managed. But hunger, yeah, we knew it.
What was the water situation?
That was extremely difficult. Each tank had at least 1-2 gallon tin of water. We used to get when the lorries brought the food up at night, every night, just as it got dark, the lorries brought it up. They also had a water lorry with the water tank on the back, and lo and behold, if you missed it, because you wouldn't get any bloody water, so we used to fill maybe one or two, we might get two-gallon tank, and the water was shocking, really awful, apart from the fact that sooner or later it had been contaminated with salt, so you're drinking salt water. It wasn't very nice. The water situation was grim. Mm-hmm. You didn't shave even with a cup of water, which the CO used to use, a cup of water and shave, but you were allowed to go without shaving. I didn't worry about that because I only had a couple of hairs down here at 19, 20 years of age, and it didn't bother me. So lads who were dark and really swarthy, they had all the beginnings of beards and things. Yeah, this was beyond me. I was still a child.